Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Are we still having computer issues?
We always have computer issues around here. Welcome inside the playbook. It's Thursday. Can we kick this off yet? I'm John Rook. Eric Scalavino from PFW is here with us for a few minutes as well. I have been told that we have found Dan Dierdorf today because he was a no-show yesterday. I was told he was traveling yesterday.
Oh, was he back home in Canton?
Well, I don't know if he was back home in Canton or not, but it was nice for his publicity people to tell us that, wasn't it? Don't you think? It's always convenient. You know, when communication is just an odd, odd business. It's
right.
Amazing that you have to communicate in order to communicate.
It's funny how in the communications industry, I know you've noticed this too, John,
right.
Some of the worst communicators you've ever seen
are
the communications.
Yeah, they're the big timers. They're the CBSs and the Westinghouses and of the world. Yeah, absolutely. So at any rate, we do hope that Mr. Dierdorf will be able to join us here in the next little bit. Russell Baxter from ESPN, NFL Research Coordinator, is also scheduled a visit with us a little before 3 o'clock this afternoon as well, Eastern Time. And we've got a conference call from Ronnie Brown and a conference call and press conference from Patriots quarterback Matt Castle from earlier today to bring along to you inside the playbook. And, of course, your emails are welcome. Open it up right off the bat, webradio@patriots.com. You know, this is the, and I've talked about it, and you and I have mentioned it as well over the last couple of days this week, this is the, as far as I'm concerned, the penultimate game. The ultimate game. Not even the penultimate game. The ultimate game for the Patriots. I think lose this game, I do not believe deep down they will reach the playoffs. Now,
it's going to be really difficult.
Again, I realize it's not impossible because they could win 6 in a row and they could, you know, it's possible. I don't see it.
It's going to be a heartbreaker for them, especially after last week when they felt like they should have won that game.
I know.
And been in first place. To drop two division games in a row would be devastating, and it would be hard to come back because then you'd be in, most likely, well, if the Jets, depends what the Jets do, it could still be in second place. But if the Jets happen to knock off Tennessee, which I don't think is going to happen, then they'd be in third place. But I think they're gonna find a way to do it because I think they understand what's at stake. And I think Miami is kind of like Buffalo in that they're a young team that's doing well but doesn't really quite know how to win yet. They managed to win that game in Oakland last week, which they had dominated, but they still were losing at the end, and it took the last-second field goal to pull it out. But
what you're saying then is you think that game in Week 3 was an anomaly.
I do.
Okay.
I do. I mean, it's so rare that a team under Belichick gets surprised the way they did and gets hammered for 60 minutes the way they did by that same play. There's no way. There is no way that they're going to let that happen again. They're going to be more prepared for this game than any other regular season game I think they've played in his tenure here.
Really?
I think so, because they were really humiliated at home by a team that should have gone 0-16 last year, the Dolphins. And they're making an impressive turnaround. You've got to give them credit. They're playing well. They've added some good players. They've added a new coach. You know, Parcells knows what he's doing. But that said, I still think they're a young team. And in a game like this where they have to prove that they're one of the elite in this conference and in this division, I just think the Patriots have too many veterans that can step up and show them that they're still the young guys in this division, the Dolphins are, and that it's going to take a lot more than a fancy play in Week 3 to beat them again.
Well, I'd like to know how you feel. Do you agree with Eric? Do you feel kind of like I do, that this is going to be, you know, tooth and nail right down to the end? I was coming in today thinking that I was going to pick the Dolphins to win this game just because of the history and the tradition, and it's always been a tough place to play. I have soften my stance somewhat. I don't think I'm really ready to give a pick. I think I have to
well,
agonize.
The show's 2 hours, so.
I know. I think I have to agonize over a little bit more. But what I want you to do is I want you to give me your pick. Will the Patriots pull it off on Sunday? And by what score? Webradio@patriots.com. So please send me your prediction. We've had a couple of them already, and it seems as if most everybody agrees with you that the Patriots are going to bounce back. I do find that the majority, the overwhelming majority of our audience is largely a Patriot fan, so in that regard, everybody has an optimistic point of view. I don't necessarily go the negative way just to balance it out. I'm based on, you know, what we've witnessed is what I'm going on. I think I'm probably leaning a little bit more toward, you know, because they have done it in the past, then I think that there's an every bit of an opportunity for them to do it again. Fact is, they are, you know, 16-1 in the last 17 games following a loss. So that is obviously a definitive statistic. Tells you that these guys know how to bounce back after difficult performances. It's just that they haven't had this type of a bounce back, and they haven't had this much of pressure put on their shoulders, considering what the big picture is at this stage of the season.
Yeah, I'd be a little bit more inclined to think that this would be a trap game if they had won against the Jets, because at that point they'd have been in first place in the division, and the Dolphins may have had a little bit more at stake, and there would have been a little bit more margin for error for the Pats. You know, winning that stretch of three division games in a row, they would have won two out of three at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying that they would have taken this game lightly, but I think that I would have been more apt to feel, as you did in the beginning, that Miami might have the edge. But after what happened last week, I don't think it bodes well for Miami.
Okay, fair enough. So you have your chance to give us your 2 cents worth on the matchup, the score, the game, how you think it's going to break down. And I guess we should probably add to the equation whether or not you feel like it is going to be do or die as far as the playoff chances are concerned. We had a few fans email in yesterday that, you know, sort of brought that into the discussion. And so I'd like to kind of continue with that thought today, because after all, I don't think I went out on a limb, but I did say yesterday, I'm going to go on record as saying, unfortunately, that if the Patriots lose this game, they won't make the postseason. I think that it is this. It's a seminal game where this season is concerned. So much so that I think, you know, you'll have three losses in the division. You'll be two games behind Miami. You could be two games behind the Jets. I mean, it's just that would be a heck of a road to overcome. Not impossible. Not mathematically. Statistically impossible, but highly unlikely.
I agree with that. I think if they lose, I think their chances really diminish of making the playoffs. It's going to be really difficult.
So that means we may be starting draft talk next week.
Well, I'm not going to give up that early, but I think it's going to be difficult for them to do it.
No, that's true. That's very true.
Before you get to emails, you want a quick practice update?
Yes, go.
Four players again missing from practice, but the fourth one was different for the third day in a row.
Really?
Yeah, the same three all week have been Adalys Thomas, no surprise, Eric Alexander, and Lamont Jordan.
Right.
The fourth one yesterday
was Richard Seymour.
That was Tuesday. He came back yesterday.
Right.
The missing one yesterday was Jonathan Wilhite, who, according to the participation report, had the flu.
Okay.
He was back today, but big man Vince Wilfork was number four missing.
Any idea why?
No idea why.
So he wasn't even spotted in the locker room.
He wasn't in the locker room. He wasn't out at the field at the start of practice. So a little bit of a cause for concern if he's not going to be around. But it's only one day, and who knows what the reasoning will be. We'll know more at the end of today when we get the Thursday participation report. If he's listed on there with something, or it could be a coach's decision, we don't know, but we'll find out.
Okay. I just, you know, I kind of like the idea, though. I mean, whether it is actually truthful or not, it makes a lot of sense that on occasion you might see a random did not participate in practice simply because guys need a little rest.
Yeah, and this could be the week to do that. And it's interesting, the guys who've been rotating were mostly defensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's conceivable that because of their veteran aspect of that position, maybe they decided, okay, well, we'll sort of take it easy. However, Richard Seymour was listed as having a toe problem, which limited him the other day. So there could be something there. But, again, it could just be something minor, and they're just being precautionary with it. So We'll have to see. You know, after tomorrow, we'll know the probable outs and doubtfuls and all that. But at this point, we have a number of players who have question marks around them.
Eric, I know that you know, you mentioned it to me when we walked in today, and Harvey Green of the Dolphins mentioned it yesterday during our conversation that, you know, it seems like everybody wants to talk about the Wildcat. Everybody wants to, you know, just, you know, figure out a way to either stop it, or it's just, it seems to be a focal point when really, you know, the Dolphins will probably be lucky to run it a half a dozen times. You know, the Patriots have got to be ready for it. But then again, at the same time, if you're Miami and the team that you played failed to stop it the last time, you got to feel like it's got to be somewhere in the playbook for this week again. But are we focusing too much attention on, you know, Miami's penchant to do different things? I mean, honestly, it seems like anytime you get something a little bit out of the ordinary, you like to jump on it, and people have jumped all over this.
Well, it's the easy way out for the media this week. It was the story of the game in week three.
Story within the story.
Right, and it was the reason why Miami won that game. So no doubt it was the story when it happened, and no doubt it should be a story this week because they're playing again. Miami has used the formation ever since with varying degrees of success, but nonetheless, it's part of their offense now. How many times a game they use it varies depending on the opponent, but it's okay. You talk about this. You talk about the play maybe at the beginning of the week, mm-hmm. especially since this week it was an unusual week because the Patriots played last Thursday, so they actually will have five straight days of working in a row for this game, Monday through Friday, because normally Tuesday's the day off, but because they had Thursday last week, they had the entire weekend off, so they've had every day this week to practice and watch film on this. So, yeah, in the beginning of the week, it legitimately should be a story because that's what happened in week three to change the entire outcome of the game. But I got to say, I'm just really tired of hearing about it because all we're getting every day is a different player's opinion about what they have seen and studied and what they think about it.
You're leading me into the next thing because I've got to imagine that the players are sick of hearing about it too.
I would hope so, and not because we're talking about it. I hope they're sick of it because they've been preparing enough for it that they don't want to get humiliated by it again. That's the reason. I mean, as far as our talking about it, the players have been pretty scarce in the locker room this week. It's been a tough week to try to get reaction sound from players, and I think they might have had the right idea because I think they might have seen that the media had a one-track mind when it came to this,
mm-hmm.
and that's all they wanted to talk about, too. So I don't really blame them in one aspect for trying to avoid us because, you know, so few of us in the media have another angle that we want to cover about this game.
Well, here's the other thing about that. I mean, the Wildcat was a huge part of that 25-point win, number one, because they rushed for 216 yards. Ronnie Brown, I still don't think, has been tackled yet. But the overall picture was it wasn't just because of that formation that game, to me, is memorable. Miami put up almost 500 yards of total offense against the New England defense that day. And so while
over the middle, especially.
Yeah, I think as we're all sort of in agreement here that the Patriots defense right now is lacking in a few areas and it still needs a lot of work in terms of personnel, and we realize that injuries are a part of it. But the fact is that, you know, if you're Miami, it's not just the Wildcat you feel like you need to have in order to be effective against this defense. This Patriots defense, I'm sure, has been working extra hard on many other facets of what Miami can present. I mean, Greg Camarillo has been in that game and has been really since then. He has been Wes Welker light, if you will. He's been the same type of
just
receiver.
Just signed a three-year deal.
Yeah, and they've been using him very effectively. And for a guy like Chad Pennington, who doesn't have the strongest of arms, he throws the, you know, intermediate and short routes very well. He knows where these guys are. Mm-hmm. I mean, Pennington to Camarillo is a combination that could chew you up and spit you out, mm-hmm. as far as the Patriots' defense is concerned. So they've got to figure out a way, you know, to play 8 in the box, 9 in the box, mm-hmm. something around that, because I think you probably want a guy like Pennington to beat you over the top if you're going to try to make him beat you.
And that Anthony Fasano at tight end is a pretty good player. Brought over from Dallas with Sperano and Parcells. Mm-hmm. He started his career there, I believe, and then made the jump with
them. Right, yeah.
He's a good player, especially in that soft spot over the middle. And as we saw last week against the tight ends, the Patriots had problems.
They haven't tackled Keller yet
They had problems with that, and that's another area where they need to try to shore something up on defense, not just with the Wildcat, but they need to harden up that soft part of the middle of the field, because that gave them a lot of problems, not just against the Dolphins. So one little aside, I just saw Jane Seymour in a commercial. That woman looks
still
great.
Still looks great for 60-some-odd years old.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know.
It's amazing. Unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. She preserves very well.
Yeah.
She's kind of like Dick Clark. I think maybe they made a deal with the devil.
Really?
You know? Yeah, you know, said, all right, Mr. Devil, you can have my soul if I can stay looking young until I'm 80.
Hmm. Back to football for a second.
No, that was actually a pretty good digression. Pretty good.
Wanted to point out something that Mike Vrabel said in the locker room today. He was one of the few guys who did talk.
Good.
And I'm sick of talking about the Wildcat, but I think it bears repeating what he said. Somebody asked him if he expected Miami to continue running that play against New England because they had so much success the first time around, or if because of that success, New England would be so prepared for it that Miami would be forced to try to do something else to get them off guard. And Mike said, you know, I'm sort of paraphrasing, but he said, you know, I've never coached, but I would think that if I were in that position, I would keep running the play at the team until they could prove they could stop it.
Right.
So,
well, that's kind of like what Heath Evans said earlier this week when he was asked about Joey Porter running off of the mouth again. He's like, you know, well, frankly, he's right. You know, he has every reason to crow. They killed us in the first game. We didn't shut him up, so more power to him.
So I'm curious to see what Miami does, because it's an interesting problem to have. Do you continue to do what got you there until the other team can stop it?
I think you have to at least go in thinking. I mean, I'm trying not to outthink this,
okay? Right?
Because I think it's really easy to do here. And I'm sure the Miami coaches are probably battling with this thought this week, to be honest with you. Yes, I think you got to feel like, first of all, that the other team, the Patriots, are going to have worked on this formation. So what we want to do is, I think we want to bring it out, but my guess is they'd probably try to put a few twists, a few bends, a few kicks, a few giggles, a few something different, a few twists in there where, you know, it may be the same look, but it's a different blocking scheme, something in there that will do it. Because frankly, what if, I mean, the greatest fear I would have as an offensive coordinator here is to find out after a game in which I get beat, the opposing team is saying in the media, saying, wow, you know, we didn't even see that, you know, once all game, and frankly, we thought we would, or, you know, we weren't prepared for it. But you don't want to hear that.
You kick yourself saying,
I should have done that again. Yes, it took the Patriots a long time to figure it out, and they never really figured out how to defend that formation and how to stop, you know, good gains out of that formation. And so because
of that. I'm surprised by that. Jane Seymour's back on, by the way.
Yeah, she really looks good for, how old is she, like 62?
She's either in her late 50s or
about
60.
I think she's hit the big 6-0.
Daniel, can you look that up? Gender?
He's editing.
All right.
He's editing audio tape, so he cannot hear a word we're saying.
It's his job to listen to what we're saying.
It's definitely his job.
We were hoping
you'd look up Jane Seymour.
IMDb, Jane Seymour.
Yeah, Jane Seymour. And see how old she is? Somebody else is going to do that.
I'm contending late 50s.
I think she's 60. I think she's hit the big 6-0. Because she looks fantastic.
Yeah, either way, she does look great.
Well, for, you know, a couple of 40-somethings here, right?
Wait a minute.
Would you guys guess?
Oh, hold on. I said late 50s.
What is she?
John says 60.
57.
Get out.
Yeah. Seriously?
She was born in 51.
She was born in 1951?
Wow.
All right. Well,
She was 57, she looks great
anyway.
She
still looks pretty doggone good.
By the way, you think I'm in my 40s, huh? Wow. Wow. And you know when I started working with you.
Yeah,
right?
I know, all those years ago.
Okay, so that's cruel.
Well, that's the only reason I said that.
Yeah.
Because I've known you for probably...
Sure.
How long have I known you? 15 years? 16 years?
About 15 years, yeah. Oh, man. That hurts, man.
Were you right out of school when we first started?
I was right out of school, and I was a youngin'. I started school a year early, so...
Really?
I was a 21-year-old college
grad. All right,
grad.
So you're only, what, 36, 37?
35.
Get out of here.
I'll be 36 in January.
Okay. Must be the... You know,
the lack of
follicles. Yeah.
And now it kills me every time.
Sorry. Believe me, someday you'll be really happy.
Someday soon, maybe. Who knows?
And what little I have is starting to gray.
Yeah. Well, see, hey, all you have to do is take a look at, you know, moi here and you figure out how the gray stuff goes. I think it's because of the work schedules we keep. Yeah. She's 57. I'm stunned by that.
It's gorgeous.
I thought I'd seen, you know who, somebody else has hit 60. It was one of the Charlie's Angels. That's what I read.
Kate Jackson?
Kate Jackson has hit 60.
She still looks pretty.
That's the one. She looks pretty good. for 60. I remember a few years back, and she's got to be late 60s now, but I think I remember a few years back when Raquel Welch hit 60.
She looked phenomenal.
And she, oh, my goodness. I was stunned.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, oh, my Lord of mercy, she's almost my mom's age.
And she wasn't sagging.
No.
At all.
No. She was fit and taut and just like, she's had major league work done, but who the heck cares?
Wow. Yeah.
I was like stunned. So anyway, you know what? Kudos to these women who are that age and look that good. Obviously, since I'm pushing that era myself, I have a newfound enthusiasm for
and along those
that
lines,
bracket.
Along those lines, if you've seen those DirecTV commercials where they take a scene from a movie and you think it's the actual movie and then all of a sudden it's one of the actors in there pretends that, they start talking about DirecTV.
Yes.
And then they go back to...
Yeah, those are great.
Those?
Yeah, the Christie Brinkley
Christie Brinkley's from the Vacation movie.
She looks fantastic in that.
Looks exactly like she did back then.
Like she never, like she really did it, which is the whole intent and purpose of the spot.
Right.
But, I mean, that was an amazing job.
Yeah.
That was an amazing job of video editing to be able to do that and put her present day. My guess is they put her head on top of the body in the pool or they did something like that. Because, obviously, that's the youthful Chevy Chase out of the movie.
Yeah.
That still dives into the pool.
I'd like to think that maybe it wasn't necessarily the head on the body. Maybe they made her do it again in the pool.
Well, you know what? I don't know. You know, you saw Christie Brinkley in all those court shots. You know, after the whole thing was going on recently, and frankly, she still looked. Yeah, she still looked great, man.
Yeah, what was that dude thinking?
I don't know. Seriously. Well, you know, I mean, I know what it's like to live with good-looking women. So I consider myself very fortunate.
It's a very safe answer by you.
I married up.
You sure did.
I married up. There's no doubt in my mind. So, you know, I know what that's all about.
I haven't even met her, and I agree.
Believe me. Well, you know me, so you know that it has to be the case, right? Okay, we kind of got sidetracked with that one a little bit, didn't we? I know we were kind of harping on the whole Wildcat thing and whether or not the Patriots would be prepared for it or not prepared for it. But if you're Miami, I just don't know how you can't at least take a few stabs at it. But if you're Miami, I think you've got to be creative with it to the point where maybe we can throw a different twist to it the Patriots wouldn't necessarily expect, because that's the X factor. You had experience. You had success with it this way with, X play. But now, the Patriots are going to adapt because they're going to be ready for X play. So now you've got to turn X into Y somehow, right?
I'm
going to bring the old algebraic integer into this thing. So
integer. I haven't heard that
term
in a long time.
Yeah.
Good one. if I were coaching Miami, I would say – I would agree with you. I'd say start with the play because the last time you ran it, they couldn't stop it. So start with it. But don't go in as your game plan relying on that for the entire game.
Do you really want – I mean, you think maybe that Miami should just, like, open up the game running Wildcat
formation? Why not? The Patriots couldn't stop it the last time.
But here's the problem with that, though. If the Patriots do shut it down,
you have other options.
Have you shot yourself in the foot for the whole game?
No, because you should have a game plan that you should have two game plans for this game. If you're the Dolphins, have a game plan that's entirely devoted to the Wildcat, and run it down their throats if the Patriots prove that they can't stop it again.
All right,
and stick with that game plan if that's the case, but have a B game plan. Where if the Wildcat doesn't work, you have another way that you've practiced all week to try to beat this team. I know it's a lot to ask, but you're a professional team. That's their jobs. I think that's what they should do going in. They should have two game plans, and whichever one shows that it's working, stick with.
All right. Well, that's obviously what Miami's working on.
Because then you can't kick yourself afterwards, John, and say, oh, we should have tried this. Start with the one you know had success. And if that fails, go to plan B. Then you can say, hey, we tried. We did everything we could, and we still couldn't beat them. Hats off to the Patriots.
Miami has been looking at this game in a lot of their media articles this week. They look at this as the biggest game that they have played probably in about 5 years. Because, obviously, they're 6-4. They're in the hunt. They have a chance to sweep the Patriots.
Maybe even longer than that.
And maybe even knock the Patriots out of the playoffs. But they're saying biggest game here, it says, since maybe December of 2003.
And who would they play in that game?
Doesn't say.
I'd say he probably even goes back further than that. It's probably the biggest game since Marino was quarterback there.
That? You're going to go that far back? Really?
They haven't really had great teams.
When was the last time they made the playoffs?
Did they make it in 2002? The year they knocked out New England?
I believe so.
That might have been the last time.
Yeah, I believe so.
But they didn't really have a chance that year.
No.
So I wouldn't consider any of those games really big because ultimately they weren't going to go anywhere anyway.
Right.
So I'd say it's one of their biggest games since the
Well, certainly game. In the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, maybe since, you know, they would have squeezed
I'll
in
say,
the playoffs.
I'll say 10 years then. This decade. It's the biggest game this decade.
In this decade?
Yeah.
You could certainly make an argument, I think, for that case. They are looking at it like that. So when you take that in consideration, couple that with the fact that the Patriots are looking at this and should be looking at this as a do-or-die type of game because of the way that the playoff ramifications break down with the tie-breaking system. This is big stuff on Sunday.
And that's why
big stuff.
That's
national
like,
big stuff.
That's why I like New England so much, because they're a veteran, experienced team who've had games like this plenty of times. They face this situation more times than this Dolphins team has, and they know how to get it done in this situation. That's why I like their experience, even though there's a lot of youth on this team now. There are enough veterans that that'll be able to get it done, and Miami still has to prove that they can do that. And if they do, you know, great, more power to them. But I just don't see it happening.
Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Send us your thoughts on the game. Predict the score. How's it going to break down? Are you of the opinion that this is a do-or-die event for the Patriots and or the Dolphins, for that matter? Because I know we have Miami fans listen. We always have opposition fans listen. And generally, outside of the Colts, everybody's too chicken to write in to this program because they think we're going to kill you. That's not the case at all. We're very fair. They might kill you on PFW in progress, but they're not going to get killed inside the playbook.
No, they won't.
Because, you know, I like to hear the other point of view. I like to see how other people approach it. Because I subscribe to the theory sometimes we get too close to the forest, we can't see the trees.
We're not going to respond to you with a Phil Savage email.
No. God, I can't believe that email. Did you guys talk about that
did.
On the show?
We talked about it on the
that
show.
That's just like, you know, hello.
Boggles your mind. Two things in the NFL that have caught me completely off guard this week.
Crazy.
Donovan McNabb not knowing about the tie games at the end of overtime, and this Phil Savage email. I just astonished that someone of that at that level of an organization is going to respond to fans write and say things like that all the time. You're going to take one guy's email so seriously that you need to stoop down to the level of replying in that immature a way? I mean, makes no sense.
No.
I mean, I know, you know what, the time that he sent it, because it's all out there now, but the time that he sent it was like shortly after midnight, which means it was right after the Browns had beaten Buffalo on that Monday night game.
Right.
So I'm sure he did it in the heat of the moment, and but my dad always taught me when you have something very heated that you're going to write to somebody, especially in an email, write it and then read it and then think about it before you send it.
Right.
And then read it again. And then tone it down.
Go
I put it.
Yourself.
I've learned to put my emails like that in the draft folder,
right?
So I can come back and
come
revisit
back after
it.
Yeah, there was no need to send it right then and there. You know,
email really sucks as a form of communication. Anyway, I'll be honest with you. I mean, we all do it because it's easy, it's fast, it's quick. You get it in, you get it out. You know, that kind of thing. But frankly, it does not portray accurately feelings.
It's difficult
and
to.
Intent.
It's difficult to do that.
And because of that,
right.
You know, if you're relying on emotion to respond.
Right.
I guarantee you, 8 times out of 10, after you send something, you're going to wish you hadn't done it.
You really have to be careful with putting those emoticons, I think they're called.
Yeah.
You know, like the little smiley face or the wink.
Yeah, a lot of people do
that. So
that
you know, okay, he was kidding.
Right.
Or it was a joke or whatever.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
Because it's really hard to gauge intent through text.
You know what I really hate, though? An email full of emoticons.
Yeah, you got to balance it. You got to balance that.
That's like, hello.
Right.
Come on. How about a phone call instead?
Yeah.
You know?
I don't like the text message, John.
No, I don't like the texting either.
If I have a cell phone, I'm going to call you, talk to you.
My kids text all the time. I mean, it's gotten out of control.
Yeah.
It's totally out of control. That's why I'm glad, very happy that I got unlimited texting in my plan. Just because the kids are just nuts with it. That's all they do. I'm like, you know, you're just... somehow, some way, we're going to lose a generation of communications and communicators because of the whole texting, emailing.
Yeah,
it's just going right down the tubes.
It's a paradox, but the more we get technologically advanced in our forms of communication, the less productive we are at communicating.
Absolutely. Absolutely, because we're relying on technology to do the communication.
The less capable
for us.
We are to
that's exactly
communicate
right.
Well.
Human beings, that's correct. I totally agree with that assessment.
And it's not like you can make the argument that, well, at least people are writing again, but they're not writing In the English language. They're using
your brain. Your brain is farting, and you're just basically typing out what it says. That's exactly what you're doing when you're texting, because you don't write in complete sentences.
Although the rare occasions that I do text, it's like I'm
complete
writing a
sentence.
Story.
See,
sentence.
You know, that's exact. I did the same thing with my oldest. He's almost 22. But, you know, then he sends me back this UTXT, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what the hell is that? I realize it's text language, but
you're texting him back, call me.
Yes, that's exactly what I said. I basically said, call me, you know, exclamation, you know, I'm just like, you know, it's crazy. I don't get that lingo. I mean, I'm trying to learn it, but I don't like using it. And I'll use capital letters, and I'll use proper, you know, punctuation.
Sure. Right. Yep.
I'm very anal about stuff like that. You know, it's the way it is. That's the journalist in me.
That's right. I agree with you.
You know,
I'm there. I'm with you.
All right. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. We're going to take a timeout here, and Russell Baxter is about 10 minutes or so away inside the playbook.
Go f*** yourself, San Diego.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. Party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com. Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place, a once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy, and the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins. We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac-A-Tack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mile and hot sack attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots gridiron grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots gridiron grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday. When you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sack Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot sack attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots gridiron grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots gridiron grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Welcome back inside the playbook for a Thursday. John Rook with Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly. Web radio at Patriots.com. It's how you reach us here in the program. I'd like to hear how you think this game will turn out on Sunday between the Patriots and the Dolphins. A do-or-die battle. Could the Patriots be, for all practical purposes, eliminated from prominent playoff contention with a loss? I realize not permanent playoff contention, but you know, you'd have to admit the tiebreakers would all be going against them. We're looking here at the trying to figure out the last significant game Miami played. It says here against Philadelphia on Monday Night Football in December of 03, which I believe they had a winning record, but they were also 9-7 in 05, I think, even though technically they were kind of out of it well before the last week. Mm. So I think in terms of significant game at this stage, this late in the season, that's probably what we're talking about.
I'm not going to I don't remember that game, that Monday night game, but I'm sure Russell will when he comes on later.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, who is going to be a part of the broadcast crew for CBS Television with Greg Gumbel at Dolphin Stadium in Miami on Sunday. Dan, it's John and Eric. Thank you very much for taking a few minutes. I sure appreciate it.
Oh, not a problem. How are you today?
We're great. And let me kind of throw this out to you as you start your, you know, you looked at your game film this week and you kind of mused over the matchups and such. You know, around here, I think all anybody wants to talk about is how the heck are the Patriots going to try to defend that wildcat that the Dolphins ran simply because they were so effective with it and it made so many different things happen out of it. But our concern is you can get fixated over, you know, one kind of gimmicky thing way too much and forget the basics. And to me, at least, that's part of what happened back in week three. How are you kind of looking at how maybe Miami should approach it in terms of their wildcat formation?
Well, I think that wildcat, it gives you got to have the right guy to make that thing work, and I think that Miami has that in Ronnie Brown. I think everyone would agree that after the phenomenal success they had against the Patriots the first time that they rolled that out, since then it's been okay, but it hasn't been quite the panacea that it was the first time around. Mm-hmm. I did a Miami game a couple weeks ago against Denver, and they ran it three or four times early in the game. Denver completely snuffed it, and that was the last time we saw it. So I just think it's I don't think it's anything that the Patriots are all that afraid of. If anything, I'd be surprised if Miami was able to make it work against New England this time around.
Well, if you are Miami, do you at least have it in your game plan? I mean, just because,
oh, sure,
because they didn't stop it the last time.
No, you have it in your game plan, but I don't think you want to come out and run it all that often in the first series or so, because I think that just gives, that's playing into New England's hands. I think New England has worked hard to defend that thing, and I think that their pride was a little bruised after the first go around, and I think they'll go nuts to try to stop it. And if I'm Miami, I'm not sure I want to play into that.
Dan, interesting note in the locker room today. Mike Vrabel was asked about that very same question. What would you do if you were Miami? And his response was kind of interesting. He said, you know, I've never coached before, but if I were on that sideline, I would try to run that play until the other team could prove they could stop me because it worked so well the first time. And I think
they'll run it. Make no mistake, they'll run it. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that they're going to come out and think that because it worked the first time that they're going to be able to run it down New England's throat this time. I have found that there's nothing quite the equal of being angry and trying to atone for being embarrassed. I think that's one heck of a motivating factor in this league, and New England certainly has that going for it this week.
Dan, how is television going to play this up? The Patriots kind of look at it like, you know, and really it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this out. If the Patriots lose this game, it's going to be very hard for them to try to find a way to get over both Miami and New York to reach the playoffs. Will you guys kind of call this a do-or-die game for them?
Well, I think, you know, you're right in the sense that yes, could three teams come out of the AFC East and make the playoffs? Yeah, it's possible, but they would have a huge problem with the Dolphins. Not only the Dolphins would be a game ahead of them in the win-loss column, but they would certainly hold the tiebreaker with both wins. So, yes, this is a game that if the Patriots want to make the playoffs, I think they've got to say we can't afford to lose this. This is not one you say, well, we'll get them next week. This one, as Tommy Boy would say, this will leave a mark.
No question about that. What has impressed you the most about Miami's resurgence?
Oh, where do you start? Although the simplest thing is to say, well, this is what a football team can do when they finally have a quarterback. Brett Favre is the best thing that's happened to the Miami Dolphins in a long time, because the chain of events when he goes to the Jets and then they release Chad Pennington. All of a sudden, the Dolphins have instant credibility at quarterback. Keep in mind, this was a franchise that a year ago, Cleo Lemon started 7 games, Trent Green started 5 games, and John Beck started 4.
Mm-hmm.
So they had no continuity at the quarterback position at all, and Chad has brought them some stabilization. Now, then you factor in the Bill Parcells factor, and you don't need me to tell you what that is there in New England.
Right.
He has brought a mental toughness through Tony Sperano. They don't like guys in the training room. They only like guys that practice. They release some people. This team bears no resemblance to the team that they were a year ago.
And on the flip side of that, where the Patriots have had to pick up so many different pieces because of injuries, and, well, you know, nobody really likes to use and really don't use injuries as an excuse. What are your impressions on the Patriots and how they've sort of had to reformulate themselves?
Well, you know, certainly Bill will never use that as an excuse. That coaches just don't do that because you can't give your players a reason to think they can't win. I think you got two guys here, and Tony Sperano and Bill Belichick that might be competing for Coach of the Year. I did the opener against Kansas City where
mm-hmm.
Tom got hurt,
mm-hmm.
and if I'd have known when I saw him go down that tunnel that's the last time we were going to see him, we would have instantly started talking about how does this team recover from that. There's losing a star player, and then there's losing Tom Brady. And when I look at where the Patriots are now in the second half of the season, looking at if they win this game in Miami, they will be in a great position to be a playoff football team and maybe even win the division. I think that might be the best job of coaching Bill Belichick has ever done.
I think that's a good
point. Especially when you look at the injuries across the board and the number of people on IR and the quality people that have missed lots of games and the instability at the running back position and in the secondary. This might be his best job ever.
I think you're right, Dan. And I'm also of the mind that there are enough veterans on this Patriots team who've been in big game, pressure type games like this one is, as opposed to the young Miami team who's just starting to assert itself, that I think that gives them enough of an edge in this game to overcome any surprises that may come up like they did in week 3.
Well, I'm just I've just been around this game a long time, and it would be shocking to me after what happened in the first game if New England doesn't show up in South Florida with a real attitude, a real chip on their shoulder that they've got something to prove, if that doesn't challenge your professionalism, if getting run over like they did the first time and having everybody talk about it for, geez, a month, they couldn't stop talking about how the Dolphins put it to the Pats and this and that and the other. I know the way this game works, and I know how a professional responds to that type of challenge. I'll be stunned if the Patriots don't come in and really just say, okay, you want to have a fist fight? Let's drop the gloves and let's go at it on the first play of the game.
Dan, one more for you here. Are you of the opinion that maybe the balance of power, if it hasn't shifted, that at least has begun to shift in the AFC East?
Oh, I'm not ready to throw dirt on New England yet. I don't.
It's okay. At least a lot of other people are, so that's fine.
Well, sure they are, but I'm assuming that Tom Brady is going to come back and play next year, and I'm assuming Lawrence Maroney is going to come back and play next year, and you know, obviously there is some good young talent. You look at Jerod Mayo. What a home run they've hit with him, the rookie out of Tennessee.
Right.
He's the real deal, and guys like Pierre Woods now are going to get a lot more playing time. And I think there's a lot to like about the Patriots. Brett Favre has the Jets going. That win last week was huge for them and bad for you. But the reality is, I still think the AFC East belongs to the Patriots.
Appreciate your time today. Thanks for squeezing us in, and we'll look forward to watching the broadcast on Sunday.
I'm sure everybody in Boston will want to watch this one.
Oh, yeah. No question
about
it.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Dan.
Right, thanks, guys.
You got it. That's, of course, Dan Dierdorf, who will be teamed up with Greg Gumbel on Sunday afternoon, 1 p.m. Eastern time for the kickoff down at Dolphin Stadium.
It's going to be a good one, John. It's going to be a good game. I'm going to give you my score prediction now.
Okay. Fire away.
I think New England wins this game 24-10.
So we hold them to 10? You're going to keep 10 points.
One touchdown, one field goal.
24-10.
Yep.
Ooh. All right, since you went ahead and did it, I guess I could go on the limb here and do mine too, huh? Dang, I really wanted to pick against the Patriots. I have to admit, I wanted to because
I knew you weren't going to.
But you know why, though? It's just because it's kind of like, you know, I'm afraid if I pick them, I'm going to jinx them. It's one of those things, you know?
Yeah.
Although I have been right about the four losses they have. I have been dead on about two, and I picked, obviously, the Patriots in the other two losses. Mm-hmm. Wow. All right, here you go. I'm going to give you 20. Let's see, they scored 31 against the Jets. Offense has been getting better. I'm going to overanalyze this. I just know it.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to go Patriots 27, Dolphins 23. Close.
Fine. That's fine.
I'm going to go with a close Patriots win. I think listening to you and listening to, you know, Fred and when you guys were doing your picks, I mean, you know, the more that I sit here and think about it, and obviously, and just now listening to Dan Dierdorf say, you know, hey, professionalism has got to, you know, come to the front here. Mm-hmm. You're not going to go down to Miami and think, oh, we're just going to walk through this. You have to remember what happened back in week 3 on your own home turf as well. So if you don't come in ready to play and ready for business, then you're going to be in, you know, then I question your professionalism. I don't think anybody has ever questioned the professionalism of anybody in that locker room down the hallway here. And because of that, I'll say, you know what? They are 16-1 after a loss since 2001. Or is it 2003?
2001 could sound
one,
right.
I believe 2001. At any rate, so they've only lost back-to-back one time
in that
time span. All right. So until the, you know.
And they're the underdog. Don't forget.
Yeah, and they are the underdog. So
Technically, they are the underdog.
I guess you have to be in a show-me type of state. And I usually do say, all right, you know what? I'm sticking with one thing until I actually see it. Then I might be convinced to go otherwise.
They're playing in Florida, not Missouri.
I realize that.
Okay.
I realize that. All right, so I'll go 27-23. But just, you know, I think it will be a nail-biter. I think it will be, you know, edge-of-the-seat kind of thing. I think that it could be decided the last play of the game, last drive of the game, last tick of the clock. You know, somebody's making a desperation heave or whatever, it could come down to a field goal, you know, that could win it, you know, as time expires. It could go overtime like last week. I think it could be that kind of a game.
And if it goes into overtime, John, and neither team scores after 15 minutes, it'll end in a tie.
Shocking. I didn't know that. Actually, about 50% of the NFL apparently didn't know that.
That's
right?
Unconscionable.
Spent some time talking about that after you left the show yesterday, and we had some really good emails. And I think the one that works the most. Did you say Russell's here?
Yoo-hoo!
Ah,
Baxter.
I knew somebody was knocking at the door. Russell, did you know about the overtime rule in the NFL?
Well, I certainly did.
I thought so.
I certainly did. I mean, I was like a young pup when it kicked in. And my good friend Tom Jackson, as a matter of fact, played in the first regular season overtime game.
Yes.
Between the Broncos and the Steelers in 1974. And wow. It ended in
a tie
anyway.
Yeah, a tie. That is correct. So now we spent some time yesterday kind of trying to figure out a better way to do overtime. Now, not only in light of whatever happened with the Bengals and the Eagles, but obviously what happened with the Patriots and the Jets last week. So, in that regard, what do you think, in your estimation, would be the right way to do overtime in the NFL?
Well, first off, the players should get time and a half. That'll happen.
You have to go through the union on that one.
It's like us getting time and a half.
Right.
It's a tough call because I've heard so many arguments as to why they have the system the way they do and stuff. And, listen, a team has a shot at stopping the other team.
Right
from the get-go. I heard Roger Goodell speak about the fact that, maybe a game can go on forever and ever. And so on. So, I think there's a lot of different ways to, to answer the question. And I don't know if there is a right answer, John. I mean, I don't know if there's a good system. And of course, the league played ties up until 1973,
mm-hmm.
and so on. And if you really think about it, since we average a tie game every 2 years since overtime began. There have been 17 ties since overtime began in 35 seasons.
And yet we haven't had one.
It's not the worst thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And as we pointed out last week on the Blitz and the various other shows, the last time there was a tie in the NFL was Pittsburgh and Atlanta in 2002. It didn't hurt either one of those teams. They both went to the playoffs that year.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we talked about the Steelers-Broncos games we just alluded to. In 1974, the Steelers finished 10-3-1 that year and won the Super Bowl. So a tie didn't exactly derail them any.
Mm-hmm.
So now, are the Bengals going to the playoffs of the Super Bowl? If they do, they'll be going without Chad Johnson, apparently.
They'll be going because
he's going anywhere with the team right now.
They'll be going because they bought tickets. That'll be the biggest thing. They will have bought tickets. So how do you make the current system better? Can you?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, there's talk of it. Do you give each team? I mean, if you're going to give a team a possession. Okay. College, I think, does it, from the 25 or the 30?
Yes, 25-yard line.
Okay. At the very least, you do it from the 50.
Well, I don't think you should
do... even just put the ball down. Do you give the chance to kick off to both teams? And...
What's the biggest complaint that I hear about reverting to the college way of doing things is that you cheapen the game by not utilizing real game scenarios. In other words, field position doesn't come into it, and clock management doesn't come into it. So if that's the biggest hinging factor as to why they don't change things for the purists and for the league itself. And for the majority of those who are in a decision-making position here, what I think that should be done, and I had a couple of mailers yesterday with me on this show also echo this, listen, play an extra quarter. Just you're going to put 15 minutes up on the clock, and you're going to let them go. That would be the simplest way to do it, because that way you don't take anything away from the regulation from the first 60 minutes that are played. You can still play the game the same way you played it for the previous 60. So you don't cheapen anything. You don't lessen anything. The same strategies come into play. All right? That's number one. But number two, and I had an emailer mention this, and I actually think this may be a better way of doing it. You go in with that mindset that you're going to play 15 extra minutes, yet when somebody scores, the very next possession, that team must either match it to keep the clock moving or must surpass it. If they surpass it, the game's over.
Well, I mean, that sounds as good as anything to me, to be honest with you. I mean, I just think it's a tough call. I mean, I don't disagree with anything you're saying at all, John. I just don't think there's any easy way to answer it. Just like a tie wasn't satisfying all those years, and stuff. You know, it just we'll have to see. I mean, you have to take certain things. I mean, here's a perfect example. Cincinnati is the team that tied on Thursday. If they wind up playing a lot of extra time, they play on a short week now,
mm-hmm.
and so on. So, I mean, there's so many variables, I think, that go in it. And it's a little bizarre on how you really handle it. But, I mean, you know, put that plan together, and I'll see if I can forward it off to the
yeah.
league office.
Yeah, I mean, I think the competition committee should definitely take a look at it, though, just because it's made the news. It's, you know, it's had people talking. And frankly, I think there is a better way to do it than the way they have it now, simply because, number one, we saw the two extremes. We saw the Jets win the coin flip, and, yes, I know the Patriots' defense – you know, should have stopped them somewhere along the way. They didn't, and they didn't give their offense a chance to to come back, and that's how that game ended. But the other extreme was is that, you know, it was almost ineptitude between Philadelphia and Cincinnati. Neither team could get in the end zone, you know, and maybe Philadelphia was a little lackadaisical in getting down the field because they didn't understand the rules. They figured, we'll just keep playing until somebody wins. You know, so...
I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, you know, it was really kind of scary if you really looked at... the way the Eagles played the final moments there and stuff, it kind of reminded you of the Super Bowl against the Patriots.
Right, right.
You know, it begged the question after I heard everything that went on: is what else don't they know?
Well,
or certain
listen, if I was
an I'm not going to lump all the players in together and so on.
But if I'm a fan, if I'm an Eagles fan, I'm ticked off.
Right. Oh, I don't blame you at all. I mean, yeah. I mean, it was like. You understand the urgency. I mean, you almost get the impression that, you know, the conversation in the huddle might have been, you know, why are we going long?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We're going long because, you know, if we don't connect something long, we're going to lose the game. And, but, you know, it's I think, I will say this, though. I think I was a little more, taken back by the lack of knowledge on the overtime in postseason than I was even the regular season
rules.
Yeah,
right.
You know,
right.
Growing up.
Yeah, that's like a basic tenement of, you know, understanding of football, I thought, you know?
Right. Well, you would at least think so.
Yeah, you would think so. All right, yeah. So let's deal then with what we've got on the schedule for this week. There is another Thursday night game tonight in Cincinnati, the aforementioned team that fell victim to that tie, playing at Pittsburgh tonight. And this is one of those mines, one of those, you know, potholes that Pittsburgh has to avoid in order to, you know, kind of keep their head above water in terms of, you know, staying on top in the division and staying first and foremost in the hunt, really, for a bye in the AFC.
Well, yeah, and it's, you know, it's a team that they've handled over the years and so on. You know, beating them four times in a row now, and you know, unfortunately for the Bengals, they come up into this game very, very banged up.
And no Chad Ochocinco either,
right? And people on their offensive line, Andrew Whitworth, Levi Jones. You know, it'll be interesting. You know, the one thing about the Steelers, I think, where Bears watching is while their offense at times appears to be limited. And, you know, and then that lack of balance, which I think is much a product of play calling than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Defensively, they look so much better than they did last year. I think their defensive unit has only given up 13 touchdowns in 10 games. And, you know, a couple of their playmakers who are healthy this year, who weren't necessarily healthy last year, Aaron Smith on the defensive line, Troy Polamalu, who was hurt down the stretch, who made one of the great interceptions last week, getting his finger underneath that ball. And James Harrison, you know, it's funny that the Steelers let Joey Porter go, and of course we'll talk about him later. And James Harrison has filled the bill nicely. You know, last week interception, sack in the end zone for a safety. You know, they have guys who make plays on defense, and they look like a team that, you know, when you find some holes in that zone defense, you can make some plays. But what's interesting is, I think you're finding less holes this year. They seem like they're a team that's been covering the pass better, not just because of the pressure, but because of the coverage. And that's almost surprising considering some of the injuries they've had in the secondary.
Right. There are obviously some really interesting games on the schedule this week. I'll get to the Jets in Tennessee in a moment, but as far as the AFC East division is concerned, Buffalo is also playing at Kansas City. Are the Bills done in your estimation? And what do the guys around you think?
We haven't talked about it yet, and I know at least one guy who doesn't think they're done, and I'll bet you can figure out who that is.
I probably can think that.
Yes, but, you know, I haven't really talked to him all that much since, you know, the game last Monday night. And, you know, it was one thing to spiral and lose those games in the division, to come back at home and lose again and again at the wire, pretty much, you know, with missing the field goal late. I think they've kind of, you know, the fact was this, even after they lost the three straight games in the division, you knew they were going to be no better than 3-3 in the division. And I think it's going to take at least in a tiebreaker or 4-2 mark to win it. You know, the Jets find themselves in pretty good shape right now because the Jets, one thing the Jets have already accomplished here is, this year is they won all three of their division games on the road. They only have two more left, and both of them are at home against the Bills and the Dolphins. That's why, and again, we'll talk about it later, that the Miami-New England game is the swing game of the year in that division this week. So, but I think Buffalo is kind of, they have themselves in a bad way now, and I think they're scratching their heads a little.
Well, the Jets in Tennessee, other than, you know, obviously the game that we're most interested in, the Patriots-Dolphins, Jets in Tennessee is going to get a lot of play in a lot of places because the Jets, first of all, they did the Patriots last Thursday night, winning in overtime in the Tennessee because they're 10-0. Would you be surprised if the Jets found a way to win that game?
Oh, no, at all. I mean, I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, I think they're playing with great confidence. I think they are they've kind of changed their offensive emphasis. They are running the football now. You've seen it the last couple weeks with their rushing attempts. You know, I think 39 and 43 against the Rams and the Patriots. Those are their two highest totals in terms of attempts this year. So you really have to like the way they've changed their game plan. It's just going to make them more dangerous. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, we've seemed to all get on this kind of tangent about Brett Favre and so on. And the thing that, to me, that is very interesting is this team was really not built for Brett Favre. Brett Favre kind of got thrown in at the last minute. This team was built revamping its offensive and defensive line to help Thomas Jones with the running game and to better itself in the 3-4 defense. You threw in Brett Favre, and I think they kind of got away early on with what they were doing as they were finding themselves. But now you see them doing much, much better in terms of offense, defense, balance in general.
Do you like Tennessee in this one to stay? Just off the top of your head, do you like Tennessee to stay undefeated?
You know, off the top of my head, yes, because I think, you know, what's also is interesting, we're seeing the Jets run more, and they threw early on.
Yeah.
The last couple of weeks, we're now seeing the Titans throw more after running early on. And for people who, you know, we have such short memories. People who didn't think that Kerry Collins could do what he's doing the last couple of weeks, and he has five touchdown passes the last two games after throwing just three in the first eight. People forget, why was Kerry Collins in there instead of Vince Young? He's the better passer. Mm-hmm. He's thrown for 36,000 yards in his career. Suddenly, all of a sudden, we started thinking, well, he's just nothing there then to, you know, I know it's six letters, but manage has become a four-letter word.
Right.
When it comes to quarterbacking and so on. But I think that you see what they did the last week, 2 weeks. They had 20 yards rushing against the Bears, and he threw a couple touchdown passes. Last week they were stonewalled in the first half, and he came back with three touchdown passes in the second half. So very, very interesting the change in emphasis here.
Definitely, definitely. I have to admit, I'm really intrigued also by Philadelphia at Baltimore. We'll find out, you know, what, you know, that tie might have done to the Eagles. Baltimore is one of those teams that, you know, is in the mix right there with New England and Miami and New York and Pittsburgh and anybody else that, you know, would be in contention in the AFC. And, you know, even though I think a lot of AFC football fans would probably root for Baltimore, I think most people have to realize, you know what, Baltimore's rooting for one of those spots right there. Maybe we need Philadelphia to give us a little help this weekend.
Oh, absolutely. Listen, Baltimore, I don't want to say the word humbled a little, but they got, you know, I guess humbled is the right word. Here's a team that had not given up more than 100 yards rushing to a team all season and gave up over 200 yards to the New York Giants last week, which ought to give you an indication how good that offensive line is for New York.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they do it with three back shows you that that's the key to what the Giants do. But you really have to like the progress that Baltimore has made. Listen, they already won more games than they did last year. They are a team that still plays pretty good defense. Now, I'm going to be curious to see how teams attack them after last week. Well, I don't think everybody can do what the Giants do. But also keep in mind that they're missing two starters in the secondary, too. Tawan Landry and Chris McAllister are both out for the year. So it's interesting to see if Baltimore can hang on. By the way, I just have to throw this in here for whatever it's worth. The Eagles have only ever played the Ravens in Baltimore once, which was back in 1997.
Mm-hmm.
It ended in a 10-10 tie.
Leave it to you to bring up something.
Well, it
like
almost
that.
Sounds like a joke, but that's...
I like it.
It is what it is.
I like it. Well, I did say that there are some really good games this week, and there really are, because you mentioned the Giants, and the Giants are going on the road to play Arizona. I never thought that might be a good game. But Arizona, let's give them credit. They're on top of that division. Obviously, it's a strange division, but Arizona is 7-3. They are undefeated at home.
Yes, they are. And, of course, we also remember the last time the Giants went to that building. So they have good karma there. But
yeah, I wasn't going to break that up, though.
No,
I wasn't going to mention that.
No, I didn't think so. Of course, the Arizona Cardinals, who have won as many games as the other three teams in the division combined,
yeah.
You know, it's kind of an odd year. But maybe this is the time for them to do it. As far as the game goes, two contrasting styles. The Giants run the football. The Giants have scored 30 or more points and run for 200 or more yards the last three games. The Arizona Cardinals have Kurt Warner, who's thrown for 300 or more yards four straight games and 6 out of 10 this year. So they both get it done different ways.
Yep.
But as amazing as it sounds, the Arizona Cardinals can clinch the NFC West this week.
Yep.
If they win and get some cooperation or, you know, bad things to happen for the Niners and the Seahawks. And let me point out a little trifecta of history here. If the Cardinals win, they will go to the playoffs for the first time since 1998, which is the longest current drought in the NFL. That obviously means they win the division. They win the division. They haven't won a division title since 1975.
And that's when they were the St. Louis
Cardinals. St. Louis Cardinals. They
won the NFC East, right.
And because they'll be a division champion, they'll host a playoff game. And the last time they hosted a playoff game, they were the Chicago Cardinals in 1947.
I love that one. 61 years.
Yes.
Or, 62 years by the time they hosted almost. Wow, that's phenomenal. That's
so they can slay a lot of dragons here.
They certainly can. They've got a lot of momentum on their side. I don't know if they'll beat the Giants, but it'd certainly be fun talking about. Carolina at Atlanta, another pretty good one. Atlanta, you know, has been rejuvenated by Matt Ryan, who certainly looks like he's a strong candidate for an Offensive Rookie of the Year award. And I don't know how good Carolina is. I realize they're 8-2. I still don't know how good they are.
Well, I think what you have to look at is they're an old-fashioned John Fox team. Solid on the offensive line. The addition of Jeff Okudah at tackle has certainly helped. They have a duo of running backs. D'Angelo Williams just coming into his own. He's got 100-yard games the last 3 weeks. Offset by Jonathan Stewart, the rookie from Oregon. And defensively, they've gotten a lot tougher. And I think that's, I don't want to say addition by subtraction, but think of what they've done this year. Chris Jenkins was traded to New York Jets.
Right.
Mike Rucker retired. Julius mm-hmm. Peppers switched sides. And he's kind of had a little bit of a rebirth. Plus, I think they might have, arguably, as far as cornerback tandem, the best in the league with Chris Gamble and Ken Lucas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they find a way to get it done. But they'll have their work cut out for it. I know the Falcons lost at home last week. To Denver. But Matt Ryan has a lot of poise. They have a big back of their own with Michael Turner. They play very, very well at home as well.
Big game for Atlanta to stay alive, you know, in that division.
Yeah, race. I mean, listen, there's going to be some really good stories here with teams that are going to be much improved, and they might fall short of the playoffs. There's still going to be outstanding stories here. But that might be, you know, we talk about the swing game with New England and Miami. In the AFC East, this might be the swing game in another division that does not have a team with a losing record.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The Sunday night game, Indianapolis at San Diego. Colts seem to have gotten it together, and the Chargers are reeling still a little bit. In fact, you know, while the Patriots may have their season on the line at Miami, I don't think there's any question San Diego's season is on the line at home against the Colts.
Yeah, if it's not, well, the only thing that's saving grace for them right now is the fact that Denver's only two games ahead of them, and they do play the Broncos again. I think if they were in another division, I mean, for instance, Jacksonville has already been mathematically eliminated from winning the AFC South.
Mm-hmm.
And now they find themselves two games behind the Colts in that division alone. So 4-6 means you've got to spend the next 2 weeks getting back to 500, and that's not an enviable position to be in. But there's something about this Charger team that every time Peyton Manning sees them, something weird happens. Remember last year in San Diego on a Sunday night, 6 interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
You go back the last 3 times they played, Peyton Manning, good passing percentage, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we over 1,000 yards in 3 games, over 300 in each of those games. 6 touchdowns and 10 picks. So remember 3 by Antonio Cromartie in that Sunday night game last year. And then, of course, the playoff game where San Diego got everybody hurt last year. Billy Volek had to come in. Darren Sproles had to come in. They still knocked off the Colts in Indy. So now, I will say this. No Sean Merriman changes that a lot. But you're right. If there is any semblance to the Charger season being still alive, they have to win Sunday night, especially with Oakland going to Denver. And you would not expect the Denver Broncos, although their defense is shaky, to have any problems with a Raiders team who, by the way, has not scored an offensive touchdown in 13 straight quarters.
Wow, is that right? 13 straight quarters?
Yeah.
Good grief.
Their offense. I mean, last week they got a punt return, so.
Yeah, that's true. And darn near won that game, too. Wow. The Monday night game, your game on Monday night on ESPN, Green Bay at New Orleans. Couple of teams.
It's already 17-14, by the way.
I was about to say. A couple of teams at 5-5, but do we see some fireworks, you think?
I don't think there's any question about it. We've seen some fireworks on Monday night to begin with.
Yeah.
And you have to like, if you like wide-open football, not only both quarterbacks are playing well, neither one of these defenses are playing great. So it lends itself to being probably a 10-9 game or another 11-10 game maybe. But I don't think so. I mean, Drew Brees has been as productive as any quarterback in terms of yards this year. Aaron Rodgers has probably been the least of the Green Bay Packers' problems this year. Last week was the first time I saw Green Bay play a complete football game all season where their offensive line fired out on the ball, knocked the Bears off the ball. Defensively, they played well. I mean, Ryan Grant reemerged last week.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody does anything without a running game. That includes Brett Favre. And yet, with all the good numbers you see from Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees, because of the lack of support from the defenses and the running games, they're both 5-5 football teams. But I expect points to be aplenty in this one Monday night.
Yeah, I would think so. I would think so. I guess that kind of brings us back full circle then to the New England Patriots and the Miami Dolphins, and whether or not you kind of agree with some of the other thought processes that we've been going through here this week, that the Patriots really have their backs to the wall here because of the way the tiebreaker comes down. The fact is, if they lose to Miami, it'll be 2 losses to the Dolphins, and they would be 2 games behind them in the standings. It wouldn't be mathematically impossible, but for all practical purposes, a Patriots loss on Sunday could be as close to a death blow as exists with, you know, still 5-6 weeks left to play.
Right. That could maybe even finish 10-6. Who might not make the playoffs, you know, seems to happen once or twice.
It happened last year to Cleveland.
There we go. It happened last year with the Cleveland Browns.
That's right.
I think we're going to see the Patriots' best effort from here, though. They have had time to go over this offense that the Dolphins run. And you see other teams running it as well. Wildcat, Wild Whore, Wild Boar, Wild Hog, Wild, you know, what, you know.
I like Wild Boar. That's pretty good.
Wild Boar. That's what I meant to say, by the way. But take your pick. And that, you know, they really got caught flat-footed when they saw it back in week 3.
Yeah.
So it will be interesting. But, I mean, you have to like the way you saw Matt Castle perform. You know, what's interesting is a lot of this has to do with you know, the mobility of the quarterback. And it was funny because even though the Dolphins would put Chad Pennington out wide in those formations,
yeah,
I think the Dolphins were, I mean, the Patriots were more mystified than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think they really considered him a threat. Yet now you look at Matt Castle, and I think the thing that has really, really reemerged for him is the fact that, you know, it was less about the 400 yards passing last week, and to me it was more about the 62 yards rushing.
Mm-hmm.
And taking advantage of the fact that every time one of those Jets linebackers kicked out, he ran right up the middle of the field. So it showed a lot of headiness and awareness on his part.
I know you know the answer to this, though. I'm going to digress just for a moment. Last Patriots quarterback for 60-plus yards rushing?
My guess is it's got to be Steve Grogan.
It was.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be. Because I don't know if, like Dan Marino, I don't know if does Tom have 60 yards in his career?
Maybe not.
I don't think Dan Marino, if I remember right, had 100 yards rushing in his career. I'm being dead serious.
Total, right?
Yeah, total.
Yeah.
Total. If you go back and look at it on, you know, a website or so on, or an old-fashioned book, I believe he had something in the neighborhood of like 89 yards or something like that for total his career. Of course, he did all right.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna take the Patriots here on the back to the wall premise.
Okay.
And you know, I know Miami's playing at home for the third straight week. They've had a couple of narrow escapes against Seattle and Oakland. And to me, that's a little too close to the vest. Now, I guess we're going to find out what's left in the tank. I think the extra rest helps the Patriots a little. But I agree with you that, I mean, this is this puts them in a bad position if they lose this game tiebreaker-wise. But I'm going to say they still have a little gas in the tank and pull this out.
From a historical perspective, let me go back just for a moment, though, to Castle's performance a week ago tonight. When he put up those kind of numbers, what did it bring forth in your memory in terms of previous quarterback performances?
Well, I mean, I think of Steve Young, who I worked with here and so on. And you know, remember Steve early in
I knew you'd say that, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the beauty of watching Steve develop as a quarterback was he was probably more of a runner early in his career, much like Roger Staubach was, as you remember. But, you know, Roger was a kind of a scrambler.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than a runner. Steve was, I mean, one of the great runs you will ever see.
He could have played
the Vikings.
He could have played tailback.
A downfield runner.
Yes, he could have played tailback.
But when Steve became a Hall of Fame quarterback is when he resisted that urge to run and then picked his spots.
Right.
And that's when he became one of the more accurate passers in the history of this game. He wasn't always like that. Some people think he was just Steve Young the way we know him right from the get-go.
Yeah, I knew Steve Young in the USFL, for goodness sake.
Absolutely. He had games where he ran for 100 and threw for 100.
Absolutely.
In that league. And, of course, made... Well, I don't think he ever got the money. Never mind.
I'm still owed money from that league.
$43 million over 40 years?
Yep.
That's worse than our 401ks these days.
Yeah, no kidding.
But, yeah, I think that's what I mean, I'm not saying that Matt Castle is Steve Young. But the ability to, you know, be on the fly like that. I mean, I don't want to say Randall Cunningham because it was a different kind of running style. Randall glided. I mean, he ran, but he also scrambled. He did both. Some guys are runners and some guys are scramblers. To me, he was both, mm-hmm. Randall Cunningham.
Mm-hmm.
Elway was a good runner, but he was also a decent scrambler as well. Fran Tarkin, of course, was the king of the scrambler.
Yes.
So, but there's a difference between being a great runner and a great scrambler.
Well, I think a lot of people around here were sold so much on Matt Castle's performance that now everybody feels like he's got to be gone after this year is over, and the word, you know, a franchise has come into play, and whether or not that's all stuff for after the season is over, and ultimately whether the Patriots decide to stick a tag on him or and try to work out a trade of some sort, it's all between, you know, now and the start of next season. Fact is, though, is that Matt Castle, what he has done with his opportunity is, to, at least in my estimation, sort of unprecedented here. I don't really remember a quarterback that has had to come in for a, and this is where I'm gonna rely on your expertise and your historical knowledge here and your statistical knowledge as well. I don't remember a quarterback who has come in for a star, a superstar in this league, who went down early in a year, a backup to come in, especially a backup with as little experience as Matt Castle is, and come in and develop the way Matt Castle has. Do you? Can you come
no.
up with anything
I mean,
comparable?
The only other person you can think of, and he, I don't even know if you would say he developed, because I don't think he developed until years now, was actually Tom Brady.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the only story that really is similar.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I mean, other guys have replaced guys, and you know the famous Jim Plunkett story and
right,
stuff.
Right, right.
But those were veteran guys who came off the benches. This is a little different, you know. This is a, and it actually is an odd position the Patriots eventually be in. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And because they're going to have to probably make a decision of what they're going to do with Matt somewhere down the road here.
Well, that decision, I'm sure,
and that's months away.
It's months away, but people aren't already talking.
Oh
no, I
know
absolutely they're talking about it. But I think a lot of it's going to have to do with how they deem, you know, you know, Brady's rehab and how it's going, because there's just no way. They've invested all this sweat equity now in Matt Cassel and seen him develop into what he's developing into. There's no way they're going to be left holding the bag on this thing. They're going to get something for it.
Right.
And whether or not they decide to keep him because they're unsure of Brady's status, or whether or not they decide to trade him away and they franchise him and they get a first-round pick or whatever in return, they're going to get something out of this, as well they should. It's their right to do that.
Absolutely. You know, they're gonna. It's something. I want to say it's actually kind of a nice problem to have.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
I mean, if you had to have a problem to begin with, I think we'd all rather have had Tom Brady healthy, because I think we'd all, you know, feel like, you know, this team would not be 6-4.
Right. That's exactly right.
But Matt Cassel is not the reason for this team being 6-4.
No, it's not. I would say if there's anything, and I think he's gotten better at this, you know, that you saw early on. Whereas I think the sack numbers that were up had a little to do with maybe the hesitancy of, you know, not playing.
Right, right.
And so on. But, I mean, you know, that's something that's getting rectified.
Right, that is
in
true.
A big way.
Yeah,
so.
Very true. Well, Russell, I'm gonna let you in a little something. You get next Thursday off.
Oh, it's that Thanksgiving thing. I heard turkey
yeah.
and everything. Right?
Yeah, yeah. I realize there's a couple of games to be played that day too. So you're obviously going to be able to, you know, enjoy football at home.
Should I just say Titans, Cowboys, and make a third pick now?
Sure,
I
mean, if you want, it's
entirely
up to you.
Do that.
All right, but so what we'll do then is we'll revisit 2 weeks from today. How's that sound?
Absolutely.
So you get the off week, and everybody can enjoy the holiday with their friends and their family and their loved ones, and in front of the set watching football, as you should do on Thanksgiving Day. As far as I'm concerned.
And by the way, since we're speaking to loved ones,
yes,
if I may. Gary, I miss you already.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate your saying that. Thank you. A lot of people do as well, and believe me, so do the guys around here who have had to move into Gary's position. So it's greatly appreciated, and I will share your sentiments with him.
Thank you, sir.
Russell, have a happy Thanksgiving. Happy holidays to you and your family, and we'll talk in 2 weeks.
Excellent, John. You too.
Thank you, Russell. Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN, joining us on Thursdays, as he always does throughout the football season here inside the Patriots playbook. Interesting thoughts on, you know, Matt Cassel and his historical perspective. I mean, I figured if anybody could come up with a comparable story like the one that we as Patriots fans and followers here have seen emerge with Matt Cassel at quarterback, he could do it, and he can't do it because there isn't one. And he's right. And those of you who have also emailed in the same sentiment about how this story is similar in a way to Tom Brady replacing Drew Bledsoe, you're right. It's the only other real example that's out there when you're talking about a quarterback coming in off the bench with as little experience as Matt Cassel had. And the fact that he's developing, this is indeed an incredible story. It's too bad it gets lost in the overall shuffle of the season, and the fact that, you know, this team you know, has had the injuries and has had the defensive lapses, and obviously we've had, you know, a resurgence from the Jets and the Dolphins within the division as well, and even the Bills for that matter. If the Patriots had everybody healthy except for Brady and Cassel had come in to do this, this would be, you know, a story where people would be talking about it nationally, and he might even be mentioned in, you know, in the same vein as MVP. It's possible. But there's just so much more going on, so much more to the story. The Cassel story in and of itself is getting kind of lost in the entire shuffle that is the Patriots. And maybe that's sort of the Patriots' way of doing things, you know? I mean, they don't like to focus on any one thing. You know that. It's all about team. There ain't no I in team, but there isn't any we either. I always love that. Who was the first player to say that? There is no I in team, and then he went on to say, there ain't no we either. I like it. All right. Well, speaking of Matt Cassel, we're going to take a timeout here, and then we're going to come back and let you listen into his conference call with media members from earlier today here at Gillette Stadium as he prepares for what undoubtedly is going to be the biggest game of his professional career, because there's so much riding on it for the team. And he's coming off an incredible lifetime-like performance against the New York Jets in terms of his stats and his numbers. Now, how can he take that and convert that into a win this weekend? We'll see if he can answer some of that. Also, Ronnie Brown's conference call, running back for the Miami Dolphins, and, of course, the key figure in the Wildcat offense for the Dolphins. That's coming up in just a couple of moments right here inside the playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call, and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com. Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy, and the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips, and we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins. We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
When you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Patriots Playbook, rolling on for a Thursday. I'm John Rook. A couple of minutes, we'll hear from Matt Cassel, and then we'll wrap up the program for the week with Ronnie Brown. Let me go ahead and throw in the programming update for you at this juncture. Next week, I'll be off traveling with the college basketball duties. I'll actually be in Anaheim, California for the 76 Classic. And so I will not be in attendance for Tuesday and Wednesday shows next week inside the playbook. I'm not entirely certain that they have finalized plans for replacement programming, at least in this time slot for next week leading up to the Pittsburgh game. Of course, you're all aware a week from today, next Thursday. Ha! How soon we forget. It's Thanksgiving Day, so there won't be any programming on the holiday. Just you'll have to kind of tune in, and we'll see if we can't figure something out for you next Tuesday and Wednesday in terms of the playbook time slot. But we will be back the following Tuesday, following after the Pittsburgh game for this next edition of the playbook here in studio. So that's what next week is. It's just one of those throwaway weeks, and had college basketball on the schedule, and we're going to try to do some things by phone, and it's kind of like, you know what, we'll just wing it from here, and that way we don't have to worry about being in certain places at certain times, because, you know, when you're 3 hours away by a time zone, as we've kind of dealt with before, it's a little difficult to get everything into sync. So at any rate, that's what's going to happen for next week, at least with this particular program, and apologize for any inconvenience it may give to you, but I'm sure we'll all get over it, and we'll be back. The first part of the next week following Pittsburgh for the recap and the subsequent preview of the next game. So that's what we've got on the schedule programming-wise for next week. In the meantime, this week's game against the Dolphins, third in a streak of three straight AFC East games, as we've talked about with the Patriots. It's their first back-to-back-to-back divisional contest since 2001. We talked about before this streak started, a couple of weeks ago, that if the Patriots could find a way to go 2-1 at minimum in this three-game stretch, they would be in pretty good shape. And as it turns out, that should still be the case. 3-0, obviously, we thought would close the division out for them. And as it looks, that probably would have been the case. But it didn't turn out that way, thanks to the overtime loss last week to the Jets. But if they do win this week against Miami, they are still in good shape. And if you're going to be a playoff team, I think we all realize if you are a playoff team, you do need to win against playoff caliber teams on the road, and that would be what this game is. The Patriots, over the last seven-plus seasons, starting with 2001, they have the best divisional record in the National Football League. They are 37-11. Pittsburgh is second, by the way, 36-13 in their division over that same time period. But of those 11 divisional losses that the Patriots have since 2001, six of them, just over half of them, have been to, yeah, say it, Miami. I don't know if that causes any alarm for you or not, but that is the fact. Six of those 11 divisional losses since 2001 have come to the Miami Dolphins. So there you go. One other thing just dawned on me. We were talking a little bit earlier with Eric Scalavino about the email that Phil Savage from the Cleveland Browns sent out, and I realize that you probably, many of you probably have had a chance to at least scour the web and find it or find stories about it, but just in the event you haven't known, I hate doing that to people. When you're doing a radio show, whether it's on, you know, the actual radio or the internet, I don't like to refer to things that you may not know about, and then it leaves you kind of scrambling and leaves you lost, and it kind of, you kind of tune out that way. So at any rate, I apologize for that, but what happened was in the story, very briefly, even, and I apologize to those who already know about it, he said, sent an email that basically contained a big fat expletive in response to a message that he had received from a fan during the game against Buffalo last week.
Go f*** yourselves.
Yeah, that's kind of what he said, basically. It was during the Monday night game, and obviously Romeo Crennel has said that he has spoke with Savage, and his quote was, "Well, we all get frustrated at times. Phil, generally, like the rest of us, tries to be professional and hold it in, but sometimes things slip out. It's unfortunate that it slipped out. Tough times, tough things happen. I'm sure that if we had to do it over again, we'd do it a little bit differently." Anyway, so that's basically what it is. We took a look. I mean, we had a copy of it here earlier, and it's basically he said, "Go root for Buffalo and blank you." That was his response to the fan who emailed him during the game. First of all, the fan who sent the email to rag on him during the game, you know, why would you do that? I mean, sure, you're disappointed, but is that the right time to do that? What would you expect to get in return? I mean, really? I'm not surprised at all that Phil Savage responded the way that he did. Was it crass? Yeah. Classless? Maybe. Human? Absolutely. So, anyway, I wanted to bring that up because, again, I hate doing that. And when I listen to radio shows and they're talking about something that I don't know anything about or, you know, that I feel like I've missed out on an insider joke and it's kind of like, okay, you've lost me. Click. I'm next station. Click. Hit the next station. So I apologize for that. Okay. I usually don't do that. And we did that and I should have explained it right then and there. So better late than never, I guess. All right, we mentioned that we're going to get to Matt Castle and Ronnie Brown to wrap up the program today, and that's what we're going to do. Everybody apparently is, by the way, very, very confident in a Patriots victory. The few that actually have responded to the email request at the beginning of the show have responded with Patriots wins, all of them. And I'm assuming that because we didn't get inundated by emails in that particular question, that everybody's feeling pretty confident that this is not out of the ordinary. And that, you know, this is business as usual, and the Patriots are going to win, and we're all confident about it. And frankly, I'm a little surprised by that. I realize that, you know, this is sort of the home team radio, and everybody's a fan, everybody has confidence, the ultimate confidence in their team. But I think you have to try to at least do some sort of standing in the middle here and try to look at both sides of the story, because both sides are equally important here. I mean, this is the biggest game, you know, for Miami. Eric mentioned it earlier, probably in the entire decade. Certainly since Monday night game, I guess, of 2003 against Philadelphia, when they had a chance with a win to perhaps, you know, squeeze into the playoffs. So, you know, it's the biggest game in a long, long time for the Dolphins and their fans as well. And the Patriots, of course, we all realize, are used to playing important games over the same stretch of time. Obviously, they've played in three Super Bowls, in four Super Bowls, and won three of them in that point in time. So, I guess I'm just a little still surprised. Maybe this is just me, but I'm still sensing a little complacency in Patriots Nation, at least those of you who are a part of this program, and I think that's a little troublesome. I would expect then that if the Patriots lose this game, for everybody to be on the warpath next week. Or then again, maybe you're just kind of like, you know, you just kind of, it is what it is. That's what we do around here, right? We just sort of accept it. And realize, you know, this team has been banged up, one of the most banged up teams. In fact, ESPN had an emailer here send me a note that says ESPN is already saying, ESPN.com is already saying that Patriots are easily the most injured team in the NFL this year. That may very well be, but every team has their own injuries to overcome. That should not be an excuse nor a reason nor anything else. It's just a fact. But my whole problem with being somewhat disappointed with this team, even though that I think by all rights and reasons, you should be fairly happy with the performance, I still am left with a disappointing feeling overall because I thought that this team's depth was a little more higher quality. Now, some of the depth certainly has been hurt. And so when you're dipping down into, you know, especially in the defensive backfield like they are, it's understandable. Nobody in the NFL probably has that kind of depth. It's just, I'm a little disappointed defensively. I'm not disappointed at all in the offense. I'm disappointed in the defense. I thought it would be better. So it's clear that they've still got a lot of work to do. They can go a long way toward rectifying the situation, injuries and all, with a win this Sunday. Matt Castle may just have to help try to, you know, get this team to outscore others, and I don't think we ever thought we would say that this season. Certainly not earlier in the year when we expected the defense to have to carry the team. It's been a role reversal now. 400 yards passing. The ninth 400-yard passing game in Patriots history last week against the Jets. He joins Drew Bledsoe, who did it four times. Brady's only done it once. Tony Eason, Steve Grogan, and Tom Ramsey each once as the only quarterbacks in Patriots history to hit the 400-yard mark in passing. So a single-game career high in passing attempts with 51, career high in completions with 30, career high in rushing yards with 62, tied his career high with three touchdown passes. Pretty good game for Matt Castle. It was a multi-million dollar game for Matt Castle. Question is, can he Can he expand on that? And can he parlay that into a performance on the road this week that will still have us talking next week? Matt Castle and then Ronnie Brown, running back from the Miami Dolphins, who's a big part of that Wildcat offense and what he expects the Patriots defense might do as we wrap up the playbook.
Matt, I don't know if you saw the quote yesterday from Mitch Mustaine, the backup quarterback at USC, but he said you inspired him. I know you probably don't like to view yourself as that kind of quarterback, but at the same time, do you take any recognition of what you've been able to do for backup quarterbacks everywhere?
I think for any backup anywhere, I guess my story is one that gives inspiration and gives promise to some of those guys that, are fighting for a position, and just to continue to work hard and continue to put your best foot forward each and every day, and quite possibly your dreams will come true.
Were there times throughout your first 3 years here where you just thought, I'm never going to get a chance here because Tom is so durable?
Well, you think that. Every week in and week out, you go out and Tom would take a few shots here and there, but he'd always get up. And he's a very durable guy, and you never know when your opportunity is going to come, and I just continue to press forward. But there were times that I didn't know whether or not I was ever going to get on the field, but I just tried to keep preparing myself like I was, and thankfully for me that I was able to get on the field and get an opportunity.
Matt, how different a quarterback guy you from the last time you played the Dolphins?
I feel like I've grown up a little bit. This is my 9th or 10th start now, so you've seen a little bit more. I understand my role a little bit better, and I feel like I'm a little bit more confident in what I'm doing.
As you have looked at the first tape with the Dolphins,
right.
Now, along the line of what you just talked to, did you see, how did I not know that?
There's a little bit of misplays here and there. I don't think we played well as an offensive unit that day, and I'm sure the team felt like we didn't put out our best performance that day. So we're working hard this week to get that corrected and go down there and put out a better performance come Sunday.
Matt, what's your mindset when you see double coverage on Randy? I mean, do you automatically look away and do something else? Or what's your thought process when you see the coverage like that?
It really depends on my read and what we've talked about in meetings, and so sometimes there are plays that my read will take me somewhere else based on him getting doubled, and then there's other reads where I'll stick with him a little bit longer because he still has an opportunity to get open on that particular pattern. So it's all based on one player or another, and so to say that I eliminate him right away just based on the fact that he's being double covered is not necessarily true all the time.
But the way the AFC East is now, do you feel like you're in a must-win?
Every week's a must-win for us, From week one to right now, we always have a sense of urgency about ourselves. Would it have been nice to get that win against the Jets? Of course, but we know that each game going out is a big game, especially this time of year.
Now, when you think back to last year, last time you played Miami, when you threw the interception to Taylor, is that the low point for your career, and how did you bounce back from that? How did you keep your confidence?
You never want to go into a game in that situation when you're winning by a bunch and throw an interception, but that happens as a football player, and you have to recognize it. And I told you guys last year, I said it won't be the first time I throw an interception, it won't be the last. And as a player, your confidence is shook a little bit, but you have to tell yourself, look, there's the next day. And luckily for me, I was able to come back out the next week against Washington and have a good week and score a touchdown, put together a scoring drive. And so that's football and that's sports. You're going to go through adversities on the field, off the field, and you just got to continue to push through.
Matt, have they called one quarterback draw this year, or all your scrambles been pass plays where you've seen the open?
They haven't called any quarterback draws, at least designed quarterback draws. They've all pretty much been scrambles on something that I feel like I can make a play with my legs.
Are there certain plays where you go to the line and think you might have an opportunity more than other? For example, man coverage and they got their back to you.
Right. Well, we saw that a lot against the Jets. We knew that they were going to try to double some guys and play a lot of man coverage and probably not account for me in terms of me running the ball. And so we had a few holes open up there, and I was able to take off and get some good yardage.
Do you think teams are going to stop. You think teams are going to, you're going to see more zone going forward because of that?
We'll see. You know, you never know. I think teams are known for doing what they do. So maybe this week we'll see some zone. Maybe this week we'll see some man. It's all based on what their game plan is going in.
When you're running, do you look for that first down marker, or are you just running to?
A lot of times I'm looking for the first down marker, and you get what you can. A lot of people say get what you can and get down. I sometimes don't get down, and I got the bruises to show it, but I have the bruises to show it, so.
Do you talk to Carson much during the season? Have you talked to him?
I've talked to him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You ever think about this? We do the irony of, you know, you're the guys in USC who's now playing, you know, with Matt and Carson.
I don't think too much about it. You know, those guys have earned their way, and they were great college players, and they're great professional players, and I've got a lot of respect for them. And I'm just happy that I've had an opportunity to play now, and we're able to talk about those kind of things.
Matt, can you appreciate the fact of how unbelievable it is? There's three starting pro quarterbacks that were basically on that team together.
It's pretty impressive, and I know the group, and there's two other guys that they don't mention, the two other backups that could easily be in this position as well. They're all good quarterbacks, and we had a really good group while I was there. And we just worked hard and made each other better through competition, and it's fun to still have that connection and relationship with those guys.
I find it ironic where you were their backups and taking advice for them or from them while you were in school, and then now maybe you can give them advice on adjusting to that backup role and, you know, just waiting, waiting your turn to get it back on the third quarterback.
You know, it's an interesting relationship, and I was the understudy of Carson. And then when Matt came in, it was more of a collaboration because I was the older guy and maybe knew a little bit more of the offense when he first got there. So now looking from the starting role, Carson's been a starter and he's an established guy. He's just injured right now. And Matt, I've had discussions with him. And, you know, I know that he's eager to get out in the field, and I'm sure he will. And he's going to have a great career in the NFL, and he's a great player. And I just tell him, you know, he's got to keep his head up, and I'm sure he is.
Second time, you know, the Jets game last week was your second time against them. Dolphins this week is your second time against them. Does your mindset change at all? Obviously, it changes from week to week. You know, there are different circumstances, but overall, does your mindset change at all?
Well, you're able to go back and really review what occurred in the first game, and make the corrections that you need to make. And also, you're a little bit more familiar with their personnel and how they played you the first game, and we'll see if that plays out in this next game. And you just study the film, and now you at least have 10 or 11 games to go off of versus when we played them before, we only had two.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, how you doing?
Have any more Wildcats teams cooked up for the Patriots this week?
I don't know. We may have a few things, you know, in the mix. Can't give them away yet, though. It's too early.
It's been a lot of fun kind of watching that kind of take off and watching other teams. I mean, I know it's not a novel thing, but kind of watching other teams kind of dig those type of plays out of their war chest and kind of employ them after watching how successful you guys have been.
Yeah, it's been interesting, you know, obviously for us to put it in and, you know, to have success that we've had, you know, it's been, you know, a lot of fun. But to see other teams around the league, you know, using variations of it, you know, I think that's an exciting part of it also.
How excited were you going into that game knowing that you guys were going to spring it on the Patriots?
Well, I mean, going into the game, I was kind of, I wasn't sure that we were going to use it. You know, we had talked about it, you know, during the week, but, you know, something like that, you know, had a lot of success on the college level. And, you know, coming into the game, you know, when we first called the formation, I was kind of like, I was excited about it. So now it was more like, let's not mess it up, you know, just keep giving ourselves the opportunity to use it. And, you know, well, you know, we had a lot of success with it.
How gratifying is this to be in a playoff chase in November, coming off a 1-15 season where you spent the last three quarters of it on IR?
It's exciting, you know, just to have that opportunity. And, you know, obviously the main thing is we don't want to get ahead of ourselves and, you know, start thinking too much about playoffs. Just kind of do what we've been doing and taking it one game at a time. And, you know, I think each game, you know, gets bigger and, you know, the reward becomes bigger each time that we have opportunity. And, you know, we just got to take it one at a time and, you know, hope everything works out for us.
You, even though the Jets are on top, in some ways, do you guys measure yourselves against the Patriots, given what they've accomplished the last couple of years?
Well, I mean, when you see a team like the Patriots, you know all their accomplishments, they obviously speak for themselves, and, you know, they still who they are, and, you know, they're a great football team, and, you know, despite, you know, they've had some stumbles this season, and, you know, they're still a good football team, and you got to look at that and, you know, not look too far ahead of yourself and start thinking about the Jets. We got to focus on the Patriots right now and, you know, how hard that is to beat them twice in one season.
Honey, is this season, you know, going back to last year when the Patriots came down to Miami, that was a game you got hurt. Has it been rewarding for you to bounce back this season and have the success that you've had?
It is. You know, when I came in, you know, obviously when I had the injury, my main goal was to come back, you know, pretty strong and, you know, do everything that I needed to do in the off season to make sure that I was back and ready for the season. And, you know, I was taking it one step at a time and, you know, providing myself with goals that are maintainable as far as, you know, setting little short-term goals as far as, like, being able to participate in all of the off-season workouts and then being able to come in and participate in camp, not miss any practices. So I kept setting short-term goals and, you know, everything worked out and I was able to start the season.